You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 61, Breen Hat de Kut. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including a TNG cast reunion in Texas, the return of the Priceline Negotiator, Trek in the Park, the next batch of IDW comics, Star Trek video games, a bridge restoration, and we go over our wish list of officially licensed products. Then in the feature, we're joined by Tristan Riddell and Ben McCormick to discuss the DS9 episode, Indiscretion. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm doing great. I actually premiered Mike and Jen last night at a comedy show up in Seattle, and it went quite well. The Dan joke that I slipped in for our podcast listeners actually got a pretty big laugh.
I did. I was wondering.
Even though no one there was in on the joke, but it was enjoyed.
They still thought it was
funny. That was an absolute blast.
That was good.
They did. It worked in context. So I'm doing great.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was a big weekend for you with your premiere. For those listeners who don't know, who haven't followed along on Twitter, Mike and Jen is your new web series of shorts that you've been working on.
Yes, indeed. And they will be hitting the web any day now, once we get some sound issues worked out. It's a show about podcasters by a podcaster, and we're having sound issues, but just ignore that. Well, yes.
You want to go for realism. I mean...
Right. Of course. Everyone has trouble with their first few podcasts sounding a little off. So it's just that's what we're going for.
That's right. And I've been seeing the drafts of these since you started working on them. And I have to say they're very well done and very funny.
Oh, thanks, Chris.
And of course, I get the Dan joke, which I love. I think I watched it and I sent you a message right away. I love the Dan joke. I even told Larry about the Dan joke, too. He was nice. Excited. Since he himself is the genesis of the whole Mike and Dan running joke in the first place. So
brought the meme out. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing fine. My schedule has been just insane for the past 4 months. And finally, things are starting to come into some manageable form, I think, which I'm excited about. And it's just happening, but I'm looking forward to hopefully devoting a little bit more time to Trek FM again. I know people think I devote all my time to it anyway, I think. That's what people tell me on Twitter, but actually it's kind of tough to keep everything moving along. But thanks to you, Greg, and the whole crew, Drew and Char and Tristan and just everyone, Colin, everyone who's contributing, so many people, we've managed to keep Trek FM moving along, and thanks to all of our listeners and readers as well.
Yes.
Speaking of which, Greg, we did have a mailbag item this week. We've been getting a lot of feedback from people, both in the comment threads on the site and on Twitter, and we don't have time to read all that stuff on here, but I did want to just share with you, Greg, this one message that we got from Jeff Iaconis from Los Gatos, California. You know, we took the week off a week before last from the Ready Room. And then last week, because of my schedule, I wasn't able to publish the show until Wednesday. Well, on Tuesday last week, someone noticed, and Jeff sent us a message, and he said, "Greetings all, you have not put up a podcast in about 2 weeks. Are you taking some time off? You are one of my favorite Trek casts and have missed not having a new show every week. Was curious when you plan on starting up the cast again. Many friends of the show hope it's very soon." And so I just thought it was really nice to get that message because, you know, we broadcast out every week and we know we have some listeners. People talk to us on Twitter. But still, it's nice to know that someone actually notices when we don't put out a show for a week.
Yeah. And we try not to do it. And I think that shows that we do, I think, pretty much every week have a show. And we hope we keep that up as much as possible. We hate missing a week. And if we do miss a week, trust us, there's a really good reason for it behind the scenes. It feels really good to have been missed that week that we were gone and the extra day. So yeah, I mean, if you're missing the show, if it hasn't shown up in your feed, or please write us on Twitter, ask us what's up, and we're more than happy to talk to you and explain to you when we're coming back. I think if we're ever just shutting down, I think we'll probably let people know that. I don't think this podcast is ever just going to fade away into the ether.
I don't think so. And we do let people know on Twitter that we're taking a week off. So do follow us there. Username TrekFM. And you'll know what's going on. And we do have a whole back catalog now of 60 shows. So you can always go back and catch one of the old ones if you haven't been with us from the beginning. All right. Well,
yeah. I want to jump in. While you're following that TrekFM, Chris posts a lot of Ready Room Rewind, which are some of the best episodes from our archive. Click some of those links. There are some great shows that you wouldn't know are back there in the archive. So do, especially if we miss a week, hop back into the archive and check some of that out.
It is getting easy to forget some of those shows because we have done so many now. And I am working on a way of getting the feature segments out to everyone in a little bit more manageable way. So I'll hopefully be announcing something on that soon for the past shows. So, Greg, it's by the time the show comes out, of course, it'll be a few days past, but August 19th is a really big day in the Star Trek world.
Indeed. It is the birthday of the great bird of the galaxy, Gene Roddenberry himself, man who originated all of this. I mean, it's hard to say there've been other people that contributed to the Star Trek universe, but without Gene, there would be none of this, none of it at all. So it's always good to mark this time. Of course, he left us, what, at this point, 20 years ago.
Yeah, it would have been 91, right? Because it was when Unification was out on TNG.
Exactly.
It was actually in memory of Gene Roddenberry and right after Star Trek VI was completed. So yeah, it's hard to believe it's been that long. Gene Roddenberry would have been 91 this year. He was born in 1921 and... there's not a lot to say that hasn't already been said in the past other than just, we just want to mark the occasion and say thank you to Gene Roddenberry for creating Star Trek and giving us all of this. And it's just a wonderful thing. I couldn't imagine getting through life without it. So, it's a big day.
Yeah. Yeah. And while we're on the topic, of course, I don't know how many people know this, but Gene Roddenberry shares a birthday with Jonathan Frakes, who's actually turning 60 today.
That's hard to believe.
I would not believe that man is 60 years old.
No.
There must just be something about Star Trek leading men that they just hold it. I mean, yeah, Frakes has aged a little bit, but I don't think he's aged since Insurrection or possibly even First Contact.
I don't know. We'll have to ask the Trill Ensign about that.
indeed.
But you're right. I mean, you look at Patrick Stewart. I mean, gosh, he looks... 50 something, right? He's in such good shape. It's amazing. I hope I look half that good when I am that age, is all I can say.
Definitely.
So happy birthday also to Jonathan Frakes.
The great trombone of the galaxy.
That's right. The trombone right there. Don't forget the Trom part.
Yes.
Before we jump into our full news stories, Greg, I wanted to mention one other thing. Last week, we talked about the project that I worked on with Larry about the CD, the rare interviews that he had on sale at Star Trek Las Vegas. And the discs were very popular. And I wanted to let everyone know that Larry is going to make a few more discs available to those who couldn't make it to the show. And if you're interested, you can purchase and order by mail. And if you just go over to Larry's website at larrynemechek.com, or of course you can find Larry on Twitter at larrynemechek, let him know you're interested. And he can hook you up with those interviews with Mark Leonard from 1986, which is amazing. Michael Piller, Bob Jessman, and Jerry Fleck.
And I'm going to need to shoot him an email. I actually didn't know about this until right before the show. I really wanted to get my hands on the CD. And of course, I wasn't able to make it to Vegas this year. So I'm going to be shooting him an email. Hopefully he can get me one of these pretty soon. I'm really excited to hear about this. I love archived interviews like this. We talked about it last week. So I'll probably mention it a little bit more once I've heard the interviews myself.
I'm sure he'll get one right up there to you. All right. So, Greg, last week we talked about LeVar Burton's actions at STLV being like a birthday present to us. And I happen to know that you love Carly Rae Jepsen's Call Me Maybe.
Yes.
And of course, we've seen in the past, I mean, there are a number of videos. There was a Star Wars mm-hmm. one, Call Me Maybe.
There
but
was.
Now there's a Next Generation one.
It's pretty great. There was a good 2 weeks there where it was all I listened to. I think there was one Ready Room where
was.
I kept just playing it during all of our breaks.
Yeah.
I think I annoyed everyone involved. I've gotten over it a little bit, but this video hooked me right back in. It's essentially this guy spent, I think, 2 weeks with a website that had all of the scripts for all the shows and then, you know, his digitized copies of the DVDs for Next Gen. And just spliced together everyone on the cast reading the lines of the song Call Me Maybe, which hopefully if you're out there, you've heard this song. It's very similar to the Star Wars one, but because you've got 7 seasons of Next Gen to pull from, it's amazing what bits get pulled together and who we see say some of these lines.
It is amazing pulling that together. All I can say about the people who do these videos is they have way too much free time. But luckily...
That's very true.
But luckily for the rest of us, they do have that time and the desire
yes.
to pull this together because it's really fun to watch. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes if you haven't seen it yet. And you can go check that out and call up Greg and he'll sing it along with you.
I definitely will. That's for sure. And maybe I'll do it from the bridge of the Star Trek Enterprise. Or the what is it called? Not Star Trek Enterprise. That's a whole other thing. The Enterprise D, which is being restored by a fan. Now, we should say, real quick before we hop into this, this isn't the actual shooting bridge set.
It's not the shooting set.
Or anything of the sort.
Right.
This is from a running, sort of a moving presentation that they did, sort of, they'd pack it up in a truck, take it to the next location, set it up. People could pretend they were on the bridge. They pack it up again. But nevertheless, it's been pretty much rescued from the garbage heap.
Yeah, I guess so. It must be that, but the parts were constructed by Paramount. So it's not a fan, you know, going down to Home Depot and buying some wood paint, making his own bridge. I mean, they are real parts that were going to be thrown into the junk heap, but... Again, I don't think it's the shooting bridge. I wouldn't think so.
Oh, no, it's yeah. very much. That one's, as far as I know, that one's still standing.
Yeah.
On the Paramount lot.
Okay.
This is part of a roadshow.
Yeah. But this fan, yeah, he's undertaking this massive project, and he's taken to Facebook. I know I've seen it there, to Twitter, and getting support. He has gotten support from actors, many people involved in Star Trek. And it's a really impressive project. And I can't wait to see what it looks like when he's all done with it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets called on by one of these fan film projects
for sure.
to do a sort of Next Gen Phase 2. There's always people looking to do that. And I'd love to actually see that. I don't know who you get to play everybody. That would be quite a thing, but I do hope we see more of this bridge in the future because you don't see that many. You see a lot of people doing restorations or recreations of the TOS bridge. You don't see that much of Next Gen, which is a disappointment because it's my favorite bridge, honestly.
I think it's just not enough time passing yet
yeah.
for it.
That's probably
all
true.
These fan series we have right now, yeah, they all are set, most of them anyway, are set in the TOS era. And most of them are recasting Kirk and Spock and McCoy.
Right.
But, you know, a time will come when that nostalgia will shift to the Next Generation and future fans will be doing their own fan series with the TNG crew. And at that point in time, yeah, I can imagine getting a call to use this. So,
yeah, it'd be really cool.
We will see where it goes. Again, this is Huston Huddleston. Is the man who is undertaking this. So we wish him the best of luck and we'll keep you posted. on how it goes.
Definitely. And now we have some more next-gen news as we're sort of flowing through Star Trek here. And it's about the Next Generation cast reunion, which I think this is the first U.S. cast reunion. There have been ones...
It gets confusing.
You don't want to mince words too much, but it's the first U.S. next-gen cast reunion, and it's going to take place this October at Wizard World.
Yeah, yeah. This stuff, it all gets confusing because you have these events taking place in Canada. You have them taking place in the U.S. You have them taking place, you know, coming up. Right. Star Trek London is coming up. The way this is being billed is it's at Wizard World. It's going to be in Austin. It's Wizard World Austin Comic Con, October 26th, right, 28th, right, in Texas. And it's being billed as the first U.S. TNG cast reunion. So apparently it's the first time that the seven main cast members are going to reunite in the United States. And of course, they got together in Calgary at the Calgary Expo earlier in the year.
Right. Right, but that's Canada, and so yeah, clearly they don't count.
Oh, we're going to get mail from late fines now.
I know, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Gwen.
I'm sorry, Gwen.
Okay. But, so...
But, yeah, I mean, this is in the U.S. I mean, and not just that, but it's more to the south. I mean, if you can get to Calgary, you're pretty much in the north of America. A lot more people can get to Austin if you're in the south, even if you're in the southwest. A lot easier to get to Austin and see the whole cast together. So it's really great that they're being able to get them together there as well.
So this will be the next step in the dueling conventions to see who can get all the cast members together. If you're interested in heading to Austin, you can go to wizardworld.com/home-tx.html. That is the direct URL to Wizard World Austin, and you can find out all the details that are going on there, find out about your tickets, and go down and see everyone. And if you're lucky, maybe you can get LeVar Burton to do another barrel roll.
Very good. Very good.
All right. Well, speaking of past cast members, Greg, let's go and look at... It was really disappointing to me when William Shatner got axed by Priceline as the negotiator. But apparently, just like Captain Kirk was in the novels, he's back.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of this was a publicity stunt. You know, they felt like Shatner
exactly
was getting oversaturated, and so they pulled him back a little bit. I wasn't really expecting to be that gone. I mean, Leonard Nimoy retired from acting and then showed up on Fringe. So the Shad is back, essentially, and he's surfing.
He is. What is the line in this commercial is like, you've still got it. And he says, I've always got it. Something is very much like Kirk. It's hard to separate.
It's fantastic.
And Shatner from, yeah, Kirk.
It is. I mean, and as time has gone on, especially, I mean, back in the 60s, Shatner was a different person than Kirk, and you see his different acting roles and he's a different person. But as time goes on, they're more and more the same. And especially since Shatner, again, talking about Star Trek leading men, he doesn't appear to have aged since, the last 20 years or so. He's still that same joyful Shatner that we know. And here he is in like a full suit.
Yeah.
carrying his surfboard into the waves. What does he shout? He surfs up or hoo boy or something like that.
Something like that, right. But they say that they know it was a mistake to to not have the Priceline negotiator there. It's amazing. Yeah, Shatner's 81 years old, and we talked about earlier how Patrick Stewart looks or how Jonathan Frakes looks. And boy, if I can look like Shatner when I'm 81 years old, I'll be very happy. So,
yeah, definitely. So it's good to see that he's still got a day job. He's not going to have to, whatever he would do if he didn't have a day job.
I tell you what, Shatner never needs to worry about not having a day job. That man is the busiest person that I know.
It's crazy.
It's insane. He's always doing an album or a book, or he's on a television show, or he's doing commercials, or he's working with his horses. It's I don't know where this man finds the time to do that, period, much less at age 81.
I know. And he still tweets while he's at it. He's one of the busiest 81-year-olds that I know of. I don't know if you've been noticing, Chris, but all show I have been drinking my Patrick Stewart sponsored age-defying elixir, which is, of course, the tea Earl Grey Hot.
I did notice that. Now, with some recent news that I saw, I do have to ask you, is that officially licensed tea that you're drinking there?
Sadly, it is not. I went into the supermarket and I looked for the, you know, I always am looking for the Chateau Picard wine or the William Riker trombone, and or, the, you know, of course, the Wesley Crusher Technicolor sweatshirt. None of these officially licensed products seem to be on the shelf at Target. It's very frustrating, but I think I've seen some recent news that things are turning around.
Right. Finally, we are going to get officially licensed Earl Grey tea, which I can't believe it's taken, you know, 20, 25 years since the start of The Next Generation. And the popularity of Earl Grey as the series went on, you know, to get this to us, but it's finally here. It comes in a really cool tin, which would be one reason to buy it. But this does remind me, Greg, apart from the ones that you just mentioned at Target, of course, what other officially licensed products would you like to see that we don't have on the shelves right now?
Well, of course, Chris, I have my Enterprise plushie that I got from ThinkGeek. But, I mean, so far it's only the original Enterprise. The Enterprise, you know, no bloody A, B, C, D, or E, or F, or G, J. There's a whole bunch of them now. I want to see, where's the Enterprise B? Where's the D, especially? I'd love to see a JJ-verse plushie. And actually, in light of what I've been watching recently, I'd love to have a DS9 plushie that I could just hang from the ceiling and then fly my other starship, my plushie starships around.
I think going along with the plushies, that would be the perfect opportunity to finally get that fur-covered Ferengi Marauder that we talked about last week.
That'd be perfect with the whips, laser whips and everything.
Right. You know, another one that comes to mind, speaking of the Ferengi and the poll that we've been running on Trek FM, which Ferengi accessory would you most like to have? I think an officially licensed tooth sharpener is something that the market needs.
Oh, that would be perfect. A tooth sharpener. Yes. I love that scene where Worf is like, should I? Oh, sweet.
That's right.
I think "aw, sweet" is the exact quote from the episode. Ronald D. Moore wrote that one. Do you think the Ferengi have like, what is it, rabbits that their teeth are always growing? Do you think Ferengi are like that, so they can just keep sharpening them and then they keep growing longer?
Probably are. You know, hamsters are like that as well. The teeth, if they have to keep gnawing on something, or the teeth keep going. Probably so. You know, another one that comes to mind, Greg, you mentioned at the top of the show that the 19th was also Jonathan Frakes' birthday, and I think some officially licensed Riker shaving cream would be in line. You can reenact that bubble bath scene from Insurrection.
The bubble bath, of course. Yeah. Well, I mean, you could have a Deanna Troi licensed bubble bath machine.
Exactly. Definitely.
But I mainly think we don't need any more people shaving their beard. We need beard growth cream. William T. Riker beard growth cream.
So we can all grow the beard. When you feel that things in your life are just not quite settling into place yet, get out the officially licensed William T. Riker beard growth cream. Slap some on your face. And within 3 years, everything will just be flowing right along smoothly for you.
Exactly. And while we're at it, of course, we can get the officially licensed William T. Riker breakfast set. You can make some eggs for your bridge crew.
While you sing that little ditty.
Yes.
Oh, that would be a good one too. All right. Well, I guess we could go on and on and on about this. But
we could.
I think the best thing to do is to ask the listeners, send us a message on Twitter, send us mail at trek.fm/contact, or go visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and let us know what officially licensed Star Trek product do you want that's not available right now. And we can gather everyone's suggestions, and then we'll explore this issue again in the future.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking to revisit this. And I'm not only ordering some tea or Earl Grey hot tins for myself, but also for a very special listener of ours in Moscow as well.
Well, yes, they will definitely love this official Earl Grey tea. I think you better send several canisters.
Yes, probably.
And for anyone else, if you want to order this tea, you can get it over at ThinkGeek, and they're selling a 4-ounce tin for $14.99. So save up your latinum, Greg. You're going to be buying a lot of Earl Grey tea here. So, Greg, I don't have any really good segue for this, because when I'm outside, tea Earl Grey hot is not exactly what I want to drink. But you were telling me about really interesting thing being put on by Atomic Arts called Trek in the Park.
Yeah. And now, of course, I'm in the Pacific Northwest, which should make everybody think, oh, Portland, Oregon, I could hop right down there. But I'm having issue making it down there. But this is happening in Portland, right down the road from me. And it's all through the month of August. It's Trek in the Park. It is basically stage reenacting of the TOS episode Journey to Babel.
That sounds very interesting. That and if you're going to reenact an episode, that is a very good one to reenact with the whole banquet scene.
Right.
And so how long is this running? I mean, there's no way I can see it, but obviously you might have a chance to get over there.
Yeah, I'm really hoping I can get down there. It's all through August. I think it's basically Saturday and Sunday of every weekend of August. So there's still, as of this recording, four more showings that you could go to. If you're in the area, and it looks really good. I've been hearing great things about this. I don't believe it's done only in Portland. I actually think there was a Trek in the Park done during Emerald City Comic Con earlier this year.
Okay.
That I just barely managed not to make it to. So this is something that's been going on for several years in the States, of course. So when I was in Japan, it was a little hard to... There's not too many Star Trek cosplayers in Japan, unfortunately.
No, unfortunately, Star Trek is not very popular here, so I don't have much chance to partake of any Star Trek activities myself.
Yeah,
but yeah, this is, as I understand, the fourth year of Trek in the Park. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they've done three others. I'm not sure what the previous three were. I think they did Mirror Mirror, if I read correctly, and Space Seed.
I think that's right.
I'm not sure what the other one was, but I'd love to see this. So just somebody fly me over and we'll check it out. Invent that transporter quickly and get me over there. That would be very cool.
That transporter would be so useful. I don't know if you realize how useful the transporter would be sometimes.
It would be very useful. All right.
Especially those of us on Twitter. Maybe before Twitter, we didn't realize how much we wanted to be around people that were spread around the world.
I was talking to my friends the other day, and you know, my phone is just going off constantly with messages, either from Twitter or iMessage. And my friend asked me about, oh, who's that? And I told them who it was, and they said, oh, well, where are they? Mm-hmm. And who's that? And where are they? And I keep listing cities where everyone involved in Trek FM is located. And they said, well, you guys are everywhere, aren't you? So a transporter would be a very useful thing.
Be very nice.
So, Greg, a couple of more items here as we push through just a real grab bag of news this week.
Oh, yeah.
We have some news about comics, and, you know, the news always comes out so far ahead of schedule, but we're talking about the November IDW titles. And I should mention before we jump into those, as people know, the Tribble story, the first part is out. The second part will be out, I believe, at the end of August. And so
we will
try probably to talk about that on the next Ready Room. So if you're interested in hearing about the truth about Tribbles, go ahead and pick up the two parts. Second part is not out yet, but when it does come out.
Which it's so far starting out pretty interesting. The two of us haven't talked about it at all. And I think we'll hold that off till part two comes out. But I think... Yeah, if you're even not a comics viewer, go ahead and hop in and start reading this ongoing comic. It's pretty interesting.
It is. Yeah, I like what they're doing with it. I think, you know, a lot of fans may not like the different direction storyline, but they're definitely charting their own course now. And as we've said before, these are supposed to be leading up to the movie. And I think it'll be fun seeing the next movie after having read the comics, because it gives you another way to watch the movie, which is to try to find the clues that were dropped in the comics. Because Roberto Orsi has said that there are clues in these comics to the plot of the next movie, but it's hard to pull out what they are.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they were. And now, I don't know how much you've been following, but what's coming up next is what's in the news right now. They're finally going to the Mirror Universe. So this is not only the alternate universe, this is the parallel universe. And I'm interested to see, or the Mirror Universe. I'll be interested to see, is it the JJ Mirror? Like, is it really going to be that different? Like, is there going to be a whole history for the JJ Mirror Universe that's also diverged?
Right.
Like, was there a Mirror Narada that made an incursion in the Mirror JJ verse?
Yeah. Mirror Nero comes in. He uses Mirror Red Matter to destroy Mirror Vulcan.
Mirror Vulcan.
And then Mirror Prime Spock shows up. It gets really confusing.
I love the scene where Mirror Uhura runs up and hugs Mirror Spock and then stabs him in the stomach.
Yes.
Because it's Mirror. I mean, you still have to have the hug, but also have to have the stabbing.
Do you think that Mirror Chekhov runs down the hall and goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. I can't do that.
Something like that, yes. Well, they all have goatees now, which
even
is
even Uhura, of course. Even Uhura has the goatee in the JJ Mirror.
Zoe Saldana, say what you will. I don't know what you would say about Zoe Saldana other than that she's stunning. She almost looks, she pulls off the goatee well. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, all right. So yeah, the Mirror Universe comics will be coming out in November. That will be ongoing number 15. So it's going to be very interesting to see where they go with that. Besides the Mirror Universe comics, by the time we get to November, we will be getting the third issue of Brannon Braga's Hive, which is this thing that we've talked about, I don't know, a month or two ago on the Ready Room, where he's going to continue the story of the Borg, which, tell me, Greg, okay, we've been talking a lot about what we're going to wear to Star Trek Las Vegas. You know, last week we decided that we would all go together as a staff meeting. In our poll, which I guess we should mention, most people want you to go as Empress Hoshi. Drew wants you to go as a Betazoid wedding guest, which worries me a little bit. There was also a vote, should I say it? A write-in vote for...
You probably shouldn't.
Something else, which we won't talk about on the show today.
A Klingon of some sort.
A Klingon of... It involves Klingons. And
maybe some love poetry.
Yes. And maybe, do Klingons howl like they do? You know, when a Klingon dies, they howl.
I know. I imagine there's some howling involved.
But here, what we could do is we could go as the Borg Queen and the Borg King, because Brannon Braga is pitting the Borg Queen and the Borg King against one another.
Yes.
And lying in the balance is the fate of the Enterprise and... if that's not enough for you, the entire galaxy.
As per usual. Oh, Chris. I mean, obviously, okay, Hive number one has not come out yet. We have not read it. We don't know. It's Brannon Braga. You know, he's our weird shit writer. Maybe he'll pull this off. Maybe it'll be a threshold. Maybe it'll be a first contact. We just don't know when Brannon's involved.
We don't know, other than I'm expecting it to be a little bit weird.
Yes.
I'll definitely be picking it up when it comes out, just because I want to see where he's going with it, and I want to see the Borg King, and I want to see if the Borg King is as threatening as the Glomer King.
Do you think the Borg King has like a crown, like a golden crown upon his head, upon his mantle, his helm?
I think, yes. I think it's like those, do you remember from maybe 5-6 years ago or more, those really creepy Burger King commercials where they brought the king back and he would just like pop up in someone's window or just freak them out? I can just see Locutus as the Borg King with that crown on his head, just kind of showing up places where you least expect him. And with that completely motionless expression.
Yeah. that would be interesting to say the least.
All right. So we'll see when this one comes out. And then also we have the continuation of the Next Generation Doctor Who comic. Now, Greg, you appeared on the new Doctor Who podcast, Playing Doctors, with friend of the show, Ben McCormick and Jenny Zell. And you've been watching a little more Doctor Who, I know. Since you started that, has this grown on you at all? Or do you still think this is just the weirdest idea that IDW's ever come up with?
It's really weird. I mean, I've now seen the Cyberman in Doctor Who. I haven't seen him like doing anything, but I've seen the what the Cybermen are. I don't like this idea of the Cybermen and the Borg teaming up, and I don't really like the art, and it's silly, and I've been talking to people who are actually interested in the idea, and I've seen some people on Twitter who are reading it and are excited. So maybe if you're a bigger Who fan than I am, especially a fan of the classic Who, maybe you're gung-ho jumping into this. It's just not my cup of Earl Grey tea.
I still haven't read any of them. I may eventually. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, like you, I haven't been able to get into them. But if you are into them, that will be coming out in November. It's Assimilation 2, number 7. And as usual, 32 pages, $3.99. Yep. Pick it up in paper form or on your iPad. Okay, Greg, let's, as we wrap up news, one more thing to talk about today, video games.
Yes.
We have good news and bad news. I'm really looking forward, actually, after seeing the latest trailer, I'm really looking forward to the console game that's going to come out next spring. I'm really excited that it's a cooperative play game because you have a PS3, mm-hmm. I have a PS3. My PS3 right now is a giant NCAA football machine. Yours is a Netflix box, but
it's a DS9 box essentially right now.
When this comes out, I'm pretty sure that you and I are going to be getting together to take on the roles of Kirk and Spock.
Yes, definitely. I can't wait for it. We might go on another Ready Room hiatus once this comes out, just so we can spend these 3 hours blowing up the corn. Watching this new trailer, it was exciting. I was telling you before the show that if this were a trailer for the new movie, people would be excited. It's an exciting trailer. There's explosions. There's action. I mean, sure, there's no Benedict Cumberbatch. There's none of that. And the Gorn look a little lizardy.
Yeah, you could say that.
They're not the classic Gorn. They're not even the Enterprise Gorn. They're like this brand new thing they've thrown together. They kind of look like the lizard from the Spider-Man comic.
Okay.
Which isn't really the direction I thought they'd go in.
To me, they remind me to go with the new Godzilla from, what was that, 98?
Right.
99? That's what they look like to me. I mean, they've got this one shot in the trailer of a couple of Gorn towering over Kirk, and I don't know if they're actually breathing fire or not, but in my mind, they were breathing fire just because of what was happening.
It wouldn't surprise me if one of them started breathing fire in the video game.
So, obviously, I mean, they've got to do this for the action of the video game. The video game wouldn't be much fun if the Gorn were stiffly swinging its arms back and forth while you play. True. So, we got to give them a little creative license here.
I'm like pushing my circle button. It's like slow karate chop. And then like X is like slow dodge. That wouldn't quite make for a dynamic video game.
You know, I will say missed opportunity here by Namco Bandai. Mm-hmm. If they don't do this, they really need to be getting on the phone with 5-year mission and making sure that Mike's arena track gets into this game.
It needs to be somewhere. I mean, if it's just at the end of the credits or something, there's no call for the karate chopped him in the back. I kicked his ass. All of that stuff. Oh, I love that song. I think we've talked about it many times before. Yeah, it needs to show up in here somewhere.
It's got to be in there. So really looking forward to this. We have the new trailer on the site. So if you go over to trek.fm to the Hyperchannel News Journal, you'll see it. We'll put a link in the show notes as well. Show notes for this Ready Room will be trek.fm/TRR61. So Greg, on the downside, we finally got something that we knew was happening for a long time, but we do have confirmation that Infinite Space is not going to happen.
Finally, yeah. And I was looking forward to it, although, to be honest, a browser-based game set in, season 5 of DS9, it was a niche product to be nice. It was a great one, something I was really looking forward to. I was definitely going to play it, but it's one of those things that it didn't have an awful lot of broad appeal to it, and that sort of is what spelled its demise, because basically they had a distributor, and that distributor basically said, nah, maybe not, and they were basically completely unable to find another distributor.
Well, they also had to cut 100 jobs, for that too, in the production. And it was really hard to survive anything like that. And you kind of knew that this is the game that's going to get the axe. And sure enough, it did. And it's a real shame. We've talked on here a number of times about, Mike and Denise Okuda's involvement in the game. And I really think that the developers were trying to make a game that was going to appeal to Star Trek fans, not just the average gamer, but to people who really cared about the Star Trek universe and making sure that the details were right. And it wasn't like STO, which is a beautiful game, but which is set after everything that we know, going into the 25th century. This was going to give you a chance to play in the universe as you know it from the television shows. So really sad to see that go, but that's what happens. The quote from GameForge was that the discontinuation is very regrettable. Unfortunately, it happens from time to time that a good concept for a game cannot be implemented as originally planned. And
honestly, this keeps happening to Star Trek games.
It does.
I don't know how much you've been following, but there was Secret of Vulcan's Wrath or something was one game. There's a good list of 5 to 10 games that I was really looking forward to that just did not ever get released.
Well, I've been a gamer going all the way back to pretty much the beginning of the video game era. Having my original Nintendo NES. Before that, I had my Atari 2600 all the way through now, going through PCs. And it's just a recurring story for us Star Trek fans that we've really gotten the short end of the stick when it comes to games over the years. Yeah. And there's been some good ones, but there's been a lot of bad ones, and then there's been a lot that were planned that just never actually made it into our consoles or into our hard drives or our floppy drives, or going back to my VIC-20, the cassette tape drive.
There you go.
Into there, but anyway, Star Trek Online is still going along. And as a last thing before we end news today, I do want to throw out a big plug, first of all, for our show Deck 8, and also a big congratulations to Colin and Tom, our hosts, who interviewed Brandon Feltzer, who's also known as Brandflakes. And Brandon is the community manager for Perfect World and for Star Trek Online.
Are those before you go on, are those quadriticale Brandflakes?
I'm sure they are. Now I have to say, for those who haven't seen Brandon's avatar on Twitter, it is a box of Kellogg's Bran Flakes, but there's a Tholian on the cover. So it's an interesting cover. But yeah, Brandon is with Perfect World, who, of course, took over Cryptic and is now the publisher of Star Trek Online. He's the community manager. And Colin and Tom have a long interview with him. They talk about the current state of STO as well as the future of STO. And Star Trek Online has been promoting this episode of Decade. It's on the front page of the Star Trek Online website, which is really cool. STO Official and Brandon have also been tweeting this out, and we have just had so much traffic pouring in for this episode to the site, and it's been great. And if you're a Star Trek Online player, I know there are a lot of STO podcasts out there, but go and give Decade a try as well. Colin and Tom, they do a great job. They're both veteran STO players. They go really in-depth into the game. And plus, you get a nice British twist on everything, which
is always fun.
Lovely. So head over. The direct link to that episode is trek.fm/D86. It's episode 6 of D8 called Brandon and the Klingons. And check that out. As Deep Space Nine continued to evolve into season 4, the nuances and the details of the show really came to the forefront. And there were a lot of great characters, including Dukat and Kira. And they had an interesting relationship. And that continued to evolve in the episode Indiscretion. And that's the show we're going to talk about today. And of course, to help us do that, we have a darker and grittier Ben McCormick from Dork Trek. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Chris. I'm fresh from the mirror universe here this week, I think. Either that or poor lighting.
I was going to say, we were just saying in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Greg's noticed that you're getting darker and darker as we go on here. So, and also joining us, we have from Hyperchannel, international sex symbol, Tristan Riddell. Hello, Tristan.
Oh, hello, guys. It's good to be back on. And I really hope that, like, whether I'm on a new podcast or introduced to a new job, I want that to be my new title at whatever job I'm at. Tristan Riddell, international sex symbol.
Yeah.
You're going to start writing your name, Tristan Riddell, comma, ISS, aren't you?
Yeah, that's what's going to, it's going to be like when you get multiple degrees, I'm just going to tag it with ISS.
That's not to be confused with the ISS Tristan Riddell, which is, I believe, the ship that Ben McCormick serves on in the Mirror Universe.
Yes, we use it to take over some of the lesser-known quadrants and sectors. That usually the babe planets just you know, swoon and surrender immediately when they hear that we've approached with the ISS Tristan Riddell.
I feel like I need to grow a goatee now.
Definitely so.
You're very popular in the parallel universe, so.
Well, maybe I need to commute there.
And then we'll measure your commute in hyperchannels.
There you go.
Anyway, okay, so we're going to talk about Indiscretion today. And we've promised that, unlike most of our DS9 shows, we're not going to talk about how DS9 set up differently from the other shows and talk about it broadly. We're actually going to talk about some of the details of Deep Space Nine for a change. So, Greg, you chose the episode this week, so you kick us off here.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm knee-deep in my rewatch of DS9, and I'm still getting used to Sisko's beard and everyone calling him Captain. And what's really interesting is how they're really getting into continuity at this point. I was saying before the show how pretty much everything in this episode, you kind of have to be familiar with the show. I mean, the Sisko's relationship with Cassidy is sort of introduced without any intro. you kind of have to know the backstory of the Cardassians and the Bajorans, and you have to know what relationship Kira and Dukat have. And that all goes into making what I think is one of the best shows of the series. I watched this episode twice now in the last week, and I love pretty much every moment of it, other than one scene we can talk about later.
I thought that was your favorite scene. Well, Ben, what are your initial thoughts on Indiscretion?
Well, when I watched this episode, we were talking about this on Twitter earlier about you can't just watch, one episode. I ended up going back to second season to the introduction of the McKee, I believe.
Yeah, and, from second season, yeah.
Building, forward from there with all the shows that were referenced in this, and I just ran out of time because there's just so much going into this one episode with backstory. But fourth season has always been my favorite season of DS9 because I always thought of it as the when it got good season. And we joked about on other shows, shave the head, grow the beard, and with Sisko. But seeing the relationship going in with Kira and Dukat, that was just, this episode really, grew Dukat specifically as a character. And it was kind of good to see that. So it's one of my top episodes for DS9.
I really enjoyed this episode. As much as I don't like Cassidy, I did enjoy the interaction that he had with the other characters, mainly Jadzia and Bashir, because that scene is priceless to me. Even though it has an amazing A storyline, for some reason that is the scene that sticks with me about this episode, just because I love it when these characters are shown as human. And but I really enjoyed, I don't know if I'm in that minority here, but I really like the character of Zial. I liked her introduction. I like the relationship, the future relationship that she's going to have with Garrick. And spoiler, yeah. The show is only 13 years old, whatever.
Right, as we always say, the show came on in 93, and so ended in 99. So, spoiler alert. We do that for TOS too, though.
Yeah,
we give TOS spoiler alerts. So,
but yeah, I think that was I really like Kira and Dukat together. I pretty much like any storyline where they're intertwined, but I'm of the mind where I like them together, but I don't what Tumblr would call ship them. so yeah, that's where I stand on this episode.
That's actually one thing I want to talk with you guys about. That is where you stand in the shipping question, because I think Kira and Dukat are amazing together in this episode. Obviously, Dukat's got problems. He definitely has issues, but we see him work through a lot of them. And he doesn't make the decision that he was thinking of making that would really have put him over the edge. And, not only does he not kill Zial, he takes her back to Cardassia with him, which is a huge step. I mean, he could have, dropped her off at an orphanage, and I don't think Kira would have been surprised. What surprised her at the end of the episode is where he says, I'm taking her back to Cardassia, damn the consequences.
And it wasn't even a question of him thinking of making the decision. I mean, he had decided that he was going to kill Zial. I mean, he pretty much went there for that purpose. So the interactions with Kira leading up to that, I think, really helped to change his mind.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was one of the many turning points of the character that we see of Dukat. And I felt like this was the first time in season 4, or actually in all the previous seasons with Dukat, that we see a more quote-unquote human character evolve, where we see a little bit more depth and less villainy and more layers. And and I like what you said, Chris, because he went there. He was not thinking about it. This was going to happen. And just the fact that he put the gun down. And then we later find out that completely changes his life.
Oh, yeah.
That decision right there did exactly what he thought it was going to do. Like, he knew the consequences, and I like that DS9 made those consequences happen. I'm glad that the next time we see Dukat, it's not, my wife totally understood, and
right.
I actually got a promotion. So
exactly. I don't want to talk about later episodes too much here, but what I also did yesterday, because I wanted to watch the bookend of all this, so I watched Sacrifice of Angels as mm-hmm. well, which is one of my favorite DS9 episodes. I actually have it in my top five episodes for which people think I'm crazy, and I actually get messages from people saying that they think my top five DS9 episodes is crazy, but I guess I look for different things in the show. But what I found interesting here is, so Dukat goes to this planet, gets himself on this mission with Kira, so he can find Zial, because he needs to kill Zial. Then, like you said, Tristan, he takes her back to Cardassia. And if you fast forward to the end of Season 6 in Sacrifice of Angels, where Dukat completely breaks down after Zial is killed by Damar, and it's such a change for the character and the way the character evolved over the course of, what, three seasons with events that started here. And I tweeted also that it's amazing that Gul Dukat is a far richer and more developed character than almost anyone on the bridge crew of Voyager.
I saw and the Voyager hate the other day.
Well, no, it's not Voyager. I don't hate Voyager. I like Voyager. It amazes me when I look at these two shows together, especially at how one writing team is able to take 20-something characters and flesh them all out. Yeah. And then you've got the first officer on the other show, who all we know about him is that he is of Native American heritage and he has an animal guide.
Yeah.
And that he'll go along with pretty much anything that his captain tells him to do, no matter what he thinks about it. And we don't know much else about him. It just amazes me. Yeah. And but here, I mean, you have someone who is a villain on the show in Dukat, who but we do see him a lot. I mean, he appears throughout the series, but he's so richly developed.
Well, see, one of the things I think that happened with DS9, Dukat specifically, but with all of the Cardassians, they weren't the bad guy of the week.
Yeah.
You know, right. They weren't villains for the sake of being villains. They really fleshed out the society and, you know, the whole aspects of the government and the military and all the interactions. They weren't just faceless drones that, you know, would come in and fill a spot like the Klingons did on the original series. They were people, you know, and they really grew them as a people as much or more than many of the regular races that we saw on Star Trek through the years. And then for Dukat, like you said, we saw him so much through DS9 that you could hate him for so many reasons other than being just the faceless villain. I mean, there was so much going on. I mean, you could pity him for some things, but he did some really evil stuff through his time that you could really hate him for. It wasn't just that, oh, you're supposed to hate him because he's the bad guy.
And then he tries to justify some of that in this episode, which I really liked, that conversation mm-hmm. between Kira when they were looking for the wreckage. He's like, no, the occupation was a benefit.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, like, this man believes in what he did. He believes in his cause. I mean, I can't remember if it was in this episode or later. He's like, do you see a single monument to me on Bajor? I mean, the arrogance involved in that is monumental and fantastic in an absurd kind of way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that stuff really kept me from liking him as much as I really wanted to through this episode. Because it is, like you say, it's monumental arrogance to say that. I mean, even if there is some way that it's true that the occupation benefited Bajor, how could he even say it? Like, there's nothing he can do in that situation but express his sorry and you know, humble himself in front of Kira. I mean, but the thing is, he's not that sort of guy, which I think is why a lot of people like him. I mean, you look at these various Vedics that you know, Vedic of the week that Kira is sleeping with, and they're just kind of this bland guy, and there's just not much substance to them. And that's Dukat's, like, great, because this is a guy who's actually got substance. Kira can butt up against him in the way that Kira loves to. Kira loves to be in an argument, and I can't imagine her being with a guy that she can't be, you know, constantly be combating, and who can, you know, come back with a perspective of his own that's so different from hers.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting here, too, is don't you get the feeling that, not from Kira's side, but from Dukat's side, not only here, but other places through the series, you get this feeling like he kind of, he has this attraction to Kira, I think. He like kind of hopes that there's some potential there.
Yeah.
For some sort of relationship. And you especially see it in here. I also felt when she tells him that she already has the Cardassian security codes, he sees her as a woman after his own heart in a way, I think, even though they were on opposite sides of the conflict.
Go ahead, Ben.
Well, I was going to say, obviously, he has a thing for Bajoran women.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
You know, we have Zial to prove that. So, I mean, I could see falling for a Bajoran. I couldn't see falling for a Cardassian too easily, but,
the whole neck thing. Would you really want to start a relationship where you can actually tell the woman, well, that's not how your mom used to do it? You know?
Oh, goodness.
Does anybody really want to be in that situation? I don't think so.
No. Oh, man. I don't know. The whole relationship's weird. I tweeted that the way that Garrick treats Kira is the way that, or that their relationship is sometimes how I feel when I'm trying to interact with a girl I like, where I'm just expressing to her how much I'm like actually impressed with how amazing she is, and she's just sitting back and is like, no, go away, you're kind of smelly. And it's just kind of uncomfortable. Like, I feel for Dukat, I think, is what I'm doing, is I've got empathy for the guy. As much as he's done atrocities in the past and atrocities in the future, I feel for this guy because he's got real feelings for Kira, I feel like, and it's not going anywhere.
Well, no matter how many showers Dukat takes, he can't wash away genocide, but you can wash away that smell.
That's right. And my other advice to you, Greg, is listen, when you're talking to these girls, stop meeting them in your Nausicaan cosplay. I told you before, it's not a turn on.
Human play dumb job. Human go on date.
Oh, man.
I love how even in the 24th century, we can't get past the stereotype that if you're big and menacing, you can't speak proper English.
Okay?
My wife and I were watching Batman and Robin the other day just for a lark, just because we thought it would be funny. And then we see Bane, and he's just like all that he does is repeat what Poison Ivy says. He's like, Bane, wall, you know, and that's all I think of is the Nausicaans.
Oh, man. Nice. Oh. Well, isn't that what Bane said to Picard or to Batman in the latest movie? You know, your punishment must be more severe. I remember that scene. He stabs into the heart. No, you don't remember that part of the movie?
No, I don't remember that. This will show you the next time you cheat at Jom Jot.
There you go.
Oh, well, speaking of poking people with things, why don't we go ahead and talk about that scene while we're talking about Kira and Dukat, of that scene of them in the cave together when Dukat sits on what's got to be the most painful spike I've ever seen.
What is the purpose of this scene? Can someone explain that to me? I mean, it's hilarious. He sits on a spike. Kira has to reach in there and pull it out. And it's kind of funny. And I guess it helps gel them together. And I guess it helps humanize Dukat in a way. But it's one scene where I watch it and like, they're really going to have Dukat, this big hulking guy, he's going to just sit down on a spike.
Right. This scene is weird to me.
Yeah.
This wasn't a spike. This was a stalagmite coming out of
right.
The,
there you go.
This thing was huge.
And I love when he turns around and then she has to pull it out. And I think I tweeted, I'm glad no one walked in on them because talk about an indiscretion going on right there.
Well, Greg, you asked the question like, why was that scene put in? I read on Memory Alpha that Iris Stephen Bear, I couldn't remember the name. I couldn't remember if it was Wolf or
Memory
Iris
Alpha.
Bear.
It's Iris Stephen Bear. I was going to tell the same story.
Oh. Nope. I was just like, he said, like, you know, like, no, even if you're in a situation with two people and you could despise each other, you're not friends, but there's some sort of like some sort of accident happens or something is said where you just both start laughing and you forget about your differences.
This would explain why in that episode where Geordi's stuck on that planet with the Romulan, he also sits down on a spike. It's a common, one of those common things that keeps coming up in Star Trek, I suppose.
It's one of the dangers of exploring space, apparently.
Exactly.
But there is actually training for that. In the third year of the Academy, they teach you how to use those moments as a bonding experience with your potential captor or potential enemy.
And then how to use those spikes to crawl out of the cave, LaForge
exactly.
style.
Multi-purposing.
Speaking Ben's of LaForge, you know the director of this episode is LeVar Burton, Reading Rainbow himself.
Exactly.
He is Reading Rainbow. That's like when you call John McClane Die Hard.
Exactly.
Which is why I was fully expecting to see more barrel rolls during the firefight at the end.
I was very surprised that they didn't slip any in.
Well, this was only his third or fourth episode directing, so he wanted to wait till he was established more.
He didn't quite have the creative control that he would have later on.
Exactly.
So, Tristan, I was making the motions to you there about the story only because we have this joke, you know, of course, that Larry's TNG book basically is Memory Alpha because it's all been transcribed onto Memory Alpha. The story that you're telling, it comes from Terry Erdman's Deep Space Nine Companion, which goes really, really in-depth into the making of DS9.
And I had no idea what those motions were. Like, I thought you were just like,
I guess that that Terry has the same problem. That his book has also been transcribed onto Memory Alpha. that's the purpose of the scene. But the scene feels a little bit ridiculous. But I guess that's the point. It's a ridiculous moment that kind of lightens the atmosphere in a tense situation between two people like that. And
I really like Nana Visitor as an actress. I like what she's done with Kira. I like her arc, and this is kind of helping that arc along. Mm-hmm. But she, as an actress, is the worst fake laughter I've ever seen. There's several times that when you're doing a scene and you have to act like something funny and you don't necessarily find it funny, Kira, like Nana Visitor, is the least convincing actress when it comes to laughing, in my opinion.
I don't know. Jerry Seinfeld's had some pretty bad girlfriends on the show who laughed like Elmer Fudd on a juicer. And
think of it like we're talking about Batman and how they talk about how people who have gone through trauma have that fake smile. I mean, maybe it's just that she's gone through so much that her laughter is fake. She's she's trying to put on a face. Retcon it all away, but... Yeah,
are we retconning right now?
I believe we are, but I'm always looking for ways I can make it work for
Retcon
me. Retcon Ray is back.
But at the same time, I mean, that does make sense within the context of her background and Deep Space Nine, so it's possible. I don't know. I have to go watch her on other shows and find moments when she laughs and then find out if that's
She doesn't
sure.
laugh much when she plays the cancer patient on Battlestar Galactica.
No, definitely not.
She did have a good smile on Castle as a dog trainer last season. So, or a dog therapist, I'm sorry. So
a dog therapist, like a dog whisperer?
Yeah. Somewhat more of the, you're having feelings of abandonment. We should discuss this, that whole thing.
That was always Kira's fallback job, just in case the whole first officer on DS9 didn't work out.
That in sculpting.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think she was not a dog therapist, but a vole therapist, because there were a lot more voles on the station than dogs.
Yes.
True. Can I mention
they were
real
pretty
quick,
traumatized after being chased around by Miles all the time.
Can I mention real quick something that I found really amusing from early on in the episode? And this is the fact that they're using any chance they can to reuse that Badlands footage that they made. Like, how often do they go meet somebody in the Badlands just so they can use that same stock footage of, like, the spinning funnels and all of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were really proud of that VFX shot.
They really
want to use it as much as possible. I think when Worf was missing, they used it too. didn't they? Like later on, I think seventh season.
Oh yeah, that's right. And I like all those scenes where Quark says, "Yeah, I have a new shipment coming in from the Badlands," and then they cut to the swirl, and then back to the bar.
Yes. Just in case you forgot what the Badlands looked like. Yes.
Oh, he holds up a picture of the Badlands and shows Bashir. It's a postcard. Greetings from the Badlands.
That was in the big sign in the writer's room. Was a reminder that we spent X million dollars on that shot.
Exactly.
So I want to see two per season or two per section of the season. So each major break.
The same thing happened with the V'ger cloud from the motion picture, right? Like that just keeps showing up in TNG.
Oh, that shows up everywhere.
It's colored slightly differently from time to time. But yeah, it's like we gave ILM a lot of money. Let's just keep using it.
I think the most infamous reuse was the Bird of Prey explosion in the Undiscovered Country reused in Generations. I mean, it wasn't even a few movies down.
Yeah.
It wasn't even... It was literally the next movie.
It's even in one of the episodes, isn't it? It's in a TNG episode,
oh, yeah.
I think.
It is, yeah. And Greg, didn't we have a joke about that? Like a Voyager episode where they cut and a Bird of Prey blows up.
It blows up for no reason.
But
it's really
there aren't any Klingons in the episode, but they're
right. Fighting Kazon.
We have this footage. Yeah, just pull that out, you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh. That's well, while we're talking about relationships, let's talk about the other relationship in this episode, which is what I call Benjamin Sisko, ladies' man. Because he's really slick in this episode, isn't he?
Oh, man. This has to be one of the
biggest... That's sarcasm.
That's sarcasm, yes. This has to be one of the biggest disconnects between the main story and the B story. And I'm amazed that I actually like the B story in this episode. And I think it's because Avery Brooks is spot on. He plays strong commander, bumbling boyfriend. And I love it.
You know, it was, I don't know, a little odd as he and Dax are talking and she just completely throws him under the bus. Oh, well, you could probably get quarters here on the station.
Every time I watch, I'm like, Jadzia, you.
Jeez, old man, what are you doing to me?
That's the Curzon in Dax that likes to do that to Sisko. Yeah.
I like when he comes onto the show every once in a while. But yeah, like that look from Sisko when he turns his head like, did you just say
but yeah, the whole so who said earlier, I think Tristan, did you say earlier that you don't really care for Cassidy?
Oh, I can't stand Cassidy. Oh yeah. Man, I hate that relationship. I don't like Cassidy. I don't like the actress. I think I mentioned before on another Ready Room that my hatred for Penny Johnson may be left over from 24 because she was such a villain in that. But I don't know, I wanted to see Sisko date a little bit more before he settles down with someone, because it's like his wife, and then he had an approximate flirtation with a random alien, and then Cassidy. But you know, we have 7 years to do something, and then he's like, "Bam, you like baseball? Let's get married." You know, I just I didn't like.
I don't know. I like Cassidy a lot. I hear what you're saying. I watched 24 before watching DS9. So I had all of that baggage that I brought into the show. But I like what Cassidy brings to it. She's what I'd like to see in a recurring relationship for the captain. I mean, Picard never really got that recurring relationship. I think Vash could have possibly turned into this. It's hard to imagine Vash really settling down as much as Cassidy did. But it's in theory possible. But, I mean, we have this strong woman. I mean, she runs her own ship. As we talk about Chris, she's a captain. She's not a guy. And that makes her a lot stronger as somebody who enters a relationship than just, you know, a crewman or, you know, a random alien of the week.
Well, see, I've watched DS9. I never watched 24. And then Penny Johnson shows up on Castle as the new police captain. And everyone who's fans of the show hates her. Because of her on 24, I completely missed that. So I don't know where all this hate is coming from in some of the forums I go to. It's like, no, she's great. You know, it's Sisko's wife, widow. You know, she's... I liked her. Yeah. And I thought that she was a strong enough character to, you know, match up with Ben Sisko.
It just means that she did her job on 24 and she did it well.
Exactly.
That's what it means.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I've never really watched a lot of 24. My wife really likes 24. So I see a lot of the episodes because she's watching them, but I've never really sat down and watched. But I've seen Penny Johnson just on the screen there without following her character. But on here, I agree that, yeah, for Sisko to have a relationship, they did need a woman who was a very strong woman. It wouldn't have matched up for him with anyone else, I don't think. And I don't really buy the whole Jennifer Sisko thing, to be honest. I know we've never seen that much of her. And the mirror Jennifer that we do see, mm-hmm. I think, is a different person than the normal Jennifer that Benjamin married.
The Benjamin we see with Jennifer isn't really the Benjamin we get to know. I mean, who's that guy
with the
lemonades on the beach? That's...
Ow!
Exactly. Thank you.
Awesome. Call back to the previous episode.
He's about to, you know, kick the warp drive into gear.
Oh, please splice that audio into this episode.
Your mother is gonna love me.
I've used that line a couple times actually. And if a girl ever understands what I'm referencing, I think I will be completely in love.
Then you know you have a match, right?
So, awesome.
I mean, the thing with Cassie, I'm kind of with Greg on the relationship thing here, though, that Sisko, to me, he's very much a family man. He loves his son. He loved his wife. His wife was killed in the battle. And I don't see him as the kind of person who would, you know, date around after that. I see him as... He would only get with a woman with whom he felt that he had a bond and it was going to be a long-term relationship and someone mm-hmm. who could be a mother to Jake. And so I think Cassidy, for me, works really well as a character for Sisko. I'm not a huge fan of the character herself, but part of it's the writing for me. I feel like Cassidy is sometimes written well and sometimes she's written as very whiny. And her scenes don't really do much for the story. There's the episode where, it's actually The Visitor, I think, where they think, no, it's not The Visitor. It's, I can't remember the name now, but Sisko's in a coma. It's when he's going to find Valhalla in the Bajoran Lost City. And Cassidy and Jake are... in the quarters kind of having this emotional breakdown. And that's a scene where I personally felt the writing, the acting, especially the acting, just didn't work. And for me, that scene has always colored Cassidy for me a bit.
I feel like Cassidy, they don't... Like I was saying with the Vedics earlier, I don't feel like every character, they put the effort into turning them into a real person. They're simply there to be a foil for a main character. Garrick's not that way at all. He may have started as maybe a foil for Bashir, but he became a very specific character. Cassidy, no, I don't feel like they ever developed her. And I think over the course of the season, she kind of got the short end of the stick. I mean, she ended up being left by herself, you know, with the promise that he'd return with that weird, ambiguous statement. So, yeah, I feel kind of bad for Cassidy over the course of the season. And even in this episode, I'm not in love with her. She does her part properly of creating this foil for Sisko. And I love the scenes with her where she's, I mean, there's the dinner scene where, Sisko has no idea what sort of conversation he's having.
Well,
it's fantastic. Cause I've totally been there before.
I love how it was so fantastic because there's so many times when the girl leaves the table and you're like, what did I say? What were we talking about? I like the meal. You know, I love that scene too.
Now, they usually pick up the wine and then put it down, and then you pick up the wine and put it down. There's a weirdness with the wine blocking. I don't know if anyone ever else notices this. It gets moved like between four or five different places on the table.
Oh, it was totally in the editing. Like they must have done multiple takes and just everyone took a turn putting it up and down. Ba-doop.
Suddenly the glass is empty, then it's full.
Yes.
Then it's empty again. All our listeners are going to go back now and see if that really happened.
I hope so. You'll see what I mean. Kidding. You'll see what I mean.
One of the big problems I had with Cassidy, though, is that I grew up on episodic television. Hmm. And you knew if a girl of the week came on and was going to be, you know, little Joe Cartwright's girlfriend, she was dead by the end of the episode. If Kirk gets married, Miramani's dead by the end of the episode. Yeah. Because you can't have those long-term attachments. So anybody who came into these shows after, you know, the beginning of the show, I had to question. So when Cassidy came along, I was waiting for several seasons that they were building up all this emotional attachment. So when they killed her off, it would be a big emotional blow to Sisko and to us as the audience. And so I never let myself really bond with the character that much because I, in the back of my mind, knew she's the main character's girlfriend. She's going to be dead and it's going to be horrible. And then,
she ends up still standing at the end.
Right.
Yeah, she wins.
Yeah.
It ends up being the main character who ends up going away. I guess not dead, but he's the one who leaves the show.
Spoiler.
Well, yes. Sorry, guys.
Spoilers.
Oh, but I do like the fact, Greg, like you said, that Cassidy puts Sisko, who, especially with his shaved head, and as a captain, I feel is a very authoritative figure on the station, and he really takes control when he is in command. But here he is in his quarters, and she's really putting him... What do I want to say here? I don't mean it in any kind of bad way. It's like he becomes just a normal guy here.
Exactly.
He's not the captain anymore. He's this guy who I've said is he's like this... confused schoolboy who hasn't yet figured out how to talk to women or understand what they are saying or what they want. And it's very interesting to see him in this position because after The Next Generation, where Picard was always in authority and we never really saw Picard, even when Picard was with Vash, he was still the captain, right?
Yeah.
And we never really got to see Picard in this kind of situation.
Well, and then there was the episode where he starts dating the midshipman. I forget her name and the name of the episode. But
Lessons.
Lessons. And basically what happens is it gets too hard. She goes on an away mission. He doesn't want to risk her life. And he realizes he has to break up with her. It's called Lessons. He doesn't learn anything. All he did was say, well, I guess I can't do the whole relationship thing. But here's Sisko actually learning a lesson from the relationship. He's actually learning that there's more to life than just commanding a space station, that he has to be more subtle and has to figure out what he wants out of life. And I think it's a big step in Sisko's progression as a character. I'm sorry, guys.
It's a very big step.
How do you what wink do you mean by on that? Via audio? I don't know.
I don't know. But that leads us to Jake's big scene, in fact.
Indeed. Indeed. Apparently Jake knows more about women than Ben does.
It's because he dresses for the ladies.
Well, he gets all of his advice from Nog.
What'd you say, Ben?
Well, I said he gets all of his advice on women from Nog, so of course Jake knows more.
Right.
Obviously.
Nog's come a long way. I mean, wasn't it just like 5 or 6 episodes ago he was on a double date with Jake and was berating the girl for like speaking and was like, shouldn't you be cutting my meat for me?
Now chewing his meat. Mm-hmm.
Chewing his meat for him. Yes, apparently Nog has gained much wisdom. Quark seems to have it right, though.
But I like the scene with Jake in here, though. It's one of the moments where I think that Jake and his dad, they had a real father-son moment. I can, picture that where as Jake is a teenager here and he's growing up and then he stops his dad. In that situation, the father is going to be concerned about dating another woman. What does my son think about this? Because, she's not Jake's mother. And how would the children feel about this? And, Jake is saying, look, dad, basically, it's okay. You like Cassidy. She likes you. it's fine, but you're scared.
Yeah.
It's like you need someone else to pull you out of that and make you see the reality, even if the advice may ultimately be coming from a Ferengi teenager.
Right.
Well, does it help though that Jake was so young when his mother died? Because she died, I guess, 3 years before the series started, so that makes it 7 years ago. And so he was, I mean, just a small child when she passed. It wasn't like, you know, she died last season, and so he has to go through all the teen angst with it. So I think sure. He's more receptive to having a stepmom than Benjamin is giving him credit for.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I definitely think that's the case. But that's what Benjamin doesn't realize.
Right.
And
right.
And you need the scene in here, even though I think, as we said, on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
This is Jake's once or twice per season
yeah.
contractual obligation to
they actually
have a meaningful
they actually had
scene.
A really good episode. It was the first episode of this season that was Jake and Ben on the solar sail ship where they sort of
oh, yeah.
get, they develop
explores.
Right. And that really develops their relationship. And I love that mm-hmm. episode because it's all on the solar ship. They don't cut back to the station to some random B-plot. It's all just there with them, and I love that about it. And mm-hmm. yeah, so I'm fine with Jake, showing up, and I think that episode led into this one very much. I'm just he sort of shows up and fixes everything in sort of a very Wesley-like fashion.
I did think that when he was talking towards the end, I was thinking, you know, I think Jake just put his Technicolor sweater on right here.
I always thought it was weird that Benjamin had to go, you know, and talk to Jake and think about this. Well, you know, she's not your mom. Jake was the one who set the two of them up.
That's true.
Like what Ben was saying, I mean, you know, he was a young boy when Jennifer died, and then he was all about this relationship from the get-go. So if there was ever an A-OK or green light from Jake, he was the first one to do it. So I do like the father-son relationship, and I like that they had that talk, but I always thought it was a little obvious that Jake would be okay with it.
Mm. I don't know if it would be from Benjamin's point of view, though. I know what you're saying. I think as outsiders, we look at it and we're like, wake
That's
up,
true.
Ben, it's yeah. there right in front of you. But yeah, I'm not sure that that would really be the case
yeah.
from Benjamin's point of view.
Well, I mean, as a dad, I can see it from his point of view that it you might overthink the situation more than everybody else involved.
Yeah.
Where you're, you know, overly concerned with your child's feeling as opposed to, you know, what the child's actually thinking and what everyone else is thinking.
So a couple of other small points in this episode that we hear about or see or have developed for the first time. One of them that we, of course, need to talk about are the Breen, because the Breen were mentioned many times as pretty much a joke throughout TNG. They never mm-hmm. really turned up. And then finally here, we get to see the Breen. And when they landed on this planet, my first thought was, what the hell are Kira and Dukat doing on Tatooine?
Yeah.
And later it became really clear to me that they were going to rescue Luke Skywalker, because Kira put on her Princess Leia as Bosch cosplay, yes. and they went in. So, the Breen here. Now, Greg, I loved your comment about the Breen.
I mean, Kira and Dukat have their sort of their action scene where they run in and they take over, and they sort of... did it remind anyone else of Princess Leia at the beginning of Return of the Jedi? You know, someone who loves you very much. She puts on the Bosch uniform. But so Kira takes off the Breen mask, and okay, that's fine. It's Kira in the Breen mask. Looks like Leia. And then Dukat takes off his mask, and here he's just wearing, I mean, it's Breen hat Dukat. It's just ridiculous. As much as I love Dukat, this is the most silly the man it has is. Ever looked.
I wanted that action figure so bad.
I know, right?
Just with detachable faceplate.
Exactly. Absolutely. It's just
detachable
complete
action.
total fail by Playmates that they did absolutely not have Breen hat to cut with removable face mask action. It's
how,
total
how can
fail.
They have like UV light Jordy? They have that as a figure.
They do.
Mm-hmm. I have that figure. I love
I
that
I do
figure.
Too. It's back in North Carolina, but I absolutely have that one.
They even put the Tom Paris, the hyper-evolved Tom Paris,
yep,
even has salamander babies with him. But we did not get a Breen hat to cut.
The injustices in this world are paramount in this episode.
Now this does bring up a point that I think you guys were talking about when I joined the other side of the room earlier.
The other side of the room.
How did they get the suits and the masks off the Breen without seeing the Breen?
Exactly. Yes, so many times throughout this show, it's like, ooh, it's a mystery what the Breen look like, and we even talk about the Breen planet, like so many say, like, oh, it's colder than a Breen winter, and then later on in the series, we find out, no, it's not a frozen wasteland, it's not Hoth, it's more like Endor, you know? And so they said no one's ever seen what a Breen looks like, and probably no one ever will. And then in the episode with the first introduction of the species,
right,
we see two people of two different societies wear their refrigeration suits, and then they're like, oh yeah, no, I have no idea what he looks like. No.
Well,
no,
maybe they found like a closet or something that had Breen
that's
suits
all that
inside
I can,
of it.
Yeah, that's
I
all I
like
can
to
think
see,
of.
Did they cut the scene? I want to see the scene with the Breen suit closet. That's all.
It's like a walk-in closet,
the
and they just
hole.
Have several on a hanger that they just go through.
Well, no,
like,
there were
like
two
the
Breen.
One.
There were the two Breen in the shower. They just come off shift as on guard
that's
duty.
What happened.
They were in the ice showers, you know, cooling off after a long day in the mines. And then Kira kind of snuck in and did, you know, did the typical cartoon ding 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 ding, 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 and got the Breen outfits, the refrigeration suits.
I can't wait until the DS9 remastered Blu-ray extended cut of this, where we actually see the two naked Breen come out of the ice shower and their clothes are missing.
They're going to look like Victor Freeze from Batman.
Right. Oh, man.
So there was some speculation that, you know, the Breen have another suit on underneath their refrigeration suit or some ridiculous thing like that to explain away why they didn't have it. I don't know. Maybe it all happened in the dark and they just couldn't
see. I like Ben's ice shower idea.
Now, yeah, Ben has the best idea I've ever heard.
Perfect.
And as far as I'm concerned, that's canon.
That's canon.
That is canon. That's part of my personal canon now.
That's law.
We'll get it
Thank
up
you,
on
Ben.
Memory beta. ASAP.
There is an explanation in the novels. I know we always talk about the non-canon novels here, but there is a novel story of what's happening within the Federation and so forth afterwards. And the Breen are part of this big confederacy. And the explanation that's given, it's kind of interesting one, is that those suits that the Breen wear are... They're not refrigeration suits, that they are intended to conceal the person inside, that the Breen are not actually a species, that the Breen are just a society made up of aliens from all over the place.
They're like the and, Zindi, where they have multiple, there's different kinds of...
Well, except the Zindi all came from the same homeworld. But
oh,
this
the Breen
is like,
would have even been
from
different,
all
different planets
over the place.
Entirely.
So it
and
would have been
the
their
way
own
they
federation.
Speak, yeah, the way they speak is also to conceal the identity. It's like they're an entire society of people who are witnesses in some high-profile case that can't be found out on television news. So they have to have their voices distorted.
I see.
So this is where all the Federation criminals go to is, you know, we thought they were going to witness protection, and actually they were going to the Breen homeworld.
Maybe this is witness protection.
That kind of makes me think of A Scanner Darkly. Have any of you guys read that short story or seen the movie?
Mm-hmm. I feel
like the guys that wore the suits that would constantly change their shape and their voice so that no one would know who they are. Mm-hmm. It kind of makes me think of that.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting idea, but again, ice showers. I'm going with that.
I think I like the ice shower the best.
Yeah. By far.
I'm just picturing like little cubes of ice showering down. It's like if you stood under the ice machine at McDonald's right. where you put your cup, except it's a larger version that showers down on you.
I think they'll kick you out of the store if you do that, though.
Probably.
Just the one time, and then the restraining order kicked in.
One out of every five showers, somebody gets unconscious.
Right. I noticed there that Ben used the past tense there, so...
Yeah, nice.
Apparently, something you want to tell us.
No. Adventures in McDonald's, part two. It'll be coming out soon.
You know, the other thing that we get here for the first time, which becomes really important as the series goes on, is that there's the mention of Cardassia's new civilian government, because the Cardassians have been a military dictatorship up to this point. And now we're finding out that there's this political change going on. Of course, I mean, we know the planet's decimated by the Klingon invasion and the Dominion, but here we see some interesting political change that gets set into motion that then plays out.
It is interesting. I especially like watching Dukat as he sort of rides the waves of Cardassia. You know, oh, this guy's in power. Well, I'm totally on his side now. Oh, civilian government. I love the civilians.
Yeah,
he's crafty, and I love how I love how Ben calls him on it, and he just shrugs. He's like, yeah, pretty much. That's how I roll.
That's how I roll. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this episode came out in 95, so this wasn't too long after the whole Soviet Union collapse and the whole uncertainty of what Eastern Europe was going to be going through. And so we were seeing, you know, governments show up and disappear in a matter of days sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to think that the writers were kind of feeding from that to some degree, that this whole sense of political unstableness was kind of, they were putting that, you know, okay, here's a civilian government from a former, you know, militaristic society. And then how long does it last?
And, yeah, this,
you know,
is...
If we watch the entire series, we see it's so successful.
Well, this is interesting that Robert Hewitt Wolf actually says that the idea behind the Cardassians, that this was a bit of an intentional parallel to the Soviet Union. Because like you said, Ben, this came out 4 years after the Soviet Union dissolved.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But he... says it like you have to go further back, but talks about the Soviet Union as being very militaristic, and then the civilians try to take over, and then they fall on hard times. And he says that they always intended to make the Cardassians go militaristic again, which is interesting. If you watch how Star Trek and science fiction sometimes, you know, both talks about existing issues, but foreshadows what's to come as well. So, Greg knows, some of our listeners know, I have a very, like, a long background with Russia, and I went to music school in the Soviet Union and studied Russian politics and all this stuff. And watching how it has transformed, you know, I mean, I saw differences from when I was there in the Soviet days, and then a few years later on when it was Russia, and there was so much promise after the Gorbachev and the Perestroika and all, and moving forward. And then you see what's going on right now with Putin.
Yeah, I feel like Russia's backslidden. Like, I was kind of not worried about them for the longest time. I thought they were on the path to democracy. And just the more I hear about what's going on in the news recently, the more I'm just really... really disappointed. And it's making me, when I'm watching these Cardassian episodes, think, well, it's not even the Soviet Union. This is a larger Russia parallel that's going on.
Well, it is. And you see it play out long after. See, they make the Cardassians go militaristic again very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And in reality, what we've seen here, I mean, once Putin came to power, and then what happens is when you get to the end of your constitutionally allowed 8-year term, and then you pick someone else and you put them in as president, and you create a new post of prime minister, and you put yourself in that post, and now you have a president and a prime minister, and then you let Medvedev have his 8 years, and then, oh, I'm going to be president again.
Right.
Okay, look, this is kind of what they were setting up here with the Cardassians and where they're going. And we see Dukat riding those waves a little bit.
Yep.
And it's a lot of it's foreshadowing of societies here that we see.
So
in
what
DS9
you're saying
a long time ago.
Is so what you're saying is Russia needs to sign a non-aggression pact
with
the Dominion. Or with Bajor.
Okay. Well, with Bajor and with the Dominion, Bajor. Actually.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because they end up doing it with both, right? What?
Anyway, I was going to ask, who in this analogy are the Klingons?
Yeah, right? Okay, when I read that about the comparison to the Soviet Union, I was like, no, we already got the Klingons with the comparison to the Soviet Union. I was a little like, no, like the Cardassians were always... the Nazis in the first couple of seasons, and now all of a sudden they're the Soviet Union. I don't know. I like it's not that it bugs me, but I was just kind of like, pick one. But maybe that's just me.
My real question is, who are the Jamaicans?
I are you making like a Jamaican bobsled team reference here? I'm.
Well, that would mean that the Breen are
the Breen
are
the Jamaicans.
The Breen are the Jamaicans. Okay, this all makes sense then. It's all coming together. All right.
It is. All right. Well, let's move on to one other topic that we have to cover in this episode, of course, as we're getting close to an hour, is Zial, because this is where we meet Zial for the first time, and she becomes a very important character through mm-hmm. the series.
What did you guys think of this actress, the one of three Zials that we're going to see? Did you like this actress? Because I thought her performance was pretty good, much better than the second one. I don't know if you can really compare it to the third one because she had the most screen time. But I thought she had a very emotional scene. I thought she was very good. I believed her. What did you guys think?
She came across as really young in this one to me. Mm-hmm. Less so actually in the next episode. I keep forgetting what it's called, but the next episode that she's in, she comes across
she's
as much,
in,
much
Return
older.
To Grace also.
Return to Grace. In this one, she comes across as very young and vulnerable, which I think is good. Sort of Dakot comes upon her and you feel instant sympathy for her. I mean, more than you're going to as just a human being. And it's really interesting the way she plays her accepting of her fate. You know, if I can't be with you, I guess I should die. She's sort of a good Cardassian in a way. So no, I really like this actress, and especially more in Return to Grace. I think she's excellent against Kira in those scenes. So I don't really remember the other Zials that well. I'm going to come to them in my rewatch, but I'm absolutely fine with this one.
Well, for me, Melanie Smith's Zial, who she plays Zial from In Purgatory's Shadow all the way through to the end, that's Zial for me. That's who I always think of. So when I come back to this episode, and this is Saya Batten, and she, like you said, is so young, and she's so much smaller and thinner than Melanie Smith as well. But I think it works here because she is supposed to be on this planet for 6 years, and apparently the Breen are using these survivors or prisoners on the ship to mine dilithium. So I think her appearance here really works. And I agree that the way she plays the character here, even though we only get to see her for a moment at the end, even though the whole episode has a lot to do with finding her, I thought she played it very well. I did think that the resolution was too quick for me, but they have 43 minutes to work with. So
right.
They had to kind of wrap it up at the end. So.
Am I the only one? It was a little weird that the Breen are using the survivors of a ship crash to mine dilithium. I mean, can't they ship workers in from anywhere? Wouldn't it make more sense to use the survivors as like ransom or something? That one bit of the plot never quite gels for me.
Am
I nitpicking?
You're asking the wrong questions, Greg.
Kind of just ignored that whole thing. That and also when they actually find where the ship's located and Kira texts the tech, I just kind of ignore that part and move forward.
For some reason, when I saw the two of them walk up on the wreckage and see the guards and everything like that, I half expected Dukat to say, "Hey, you know, I got some a companion woman here for you. You know, exactly. We just came out of the blue."
Right.
Like that's Kira's only disguise and alternate persona is the Bajoran prostitute that comes in randomly in the desert.
Out of nowhere in the desert. Always works.
Yeah.
Not suspicious at all.
Every DS9 Halloween, that's the only costume she wears.
It's like, what are you talking about? This is my Halloween costume.
And the Breen wants to say... Translation.
That was actually pretty good.
Yeah. Wow.
Translation. Let me see what I'm paying for here.
Yeah, exactly. This is the same scene, like, every other season. I'd love to see that.
Oh, that's great.
So,
no, seriously, Chris, that was really good. That was actually surprisingly good.
It's a good thing I have this screen protector on my microphone, though.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, yeah, we don't really get much development of Zial herself here, other than she's introduced, and it is the first of three that we see. I wish when they create a character that they could get the same actor or actress to play the character throughout. I especially don't like it when they have to use three different people to play a character. Although I will say that I think that all the actresses who played Zial did a good job with the character, because it never bothered me that it was a different actress. Some characters, it really bothers me. I'm like, ah, man, I really don't like... This one never really bothered me very much. And I think that speaks both to the makeup work that they did for Zial and to the actresses.
I couldn't disagree with you more.
Really? Okay.
I was fine with the first one with Batten. I thought she was good. I thought she played it young and innocent and naive. And then we have Tracy Middendorf, who is the second one, and she was only in for one episode. And there's a reason why she was only in one episode, because the producers watched the episode and they're like, what have we done?
Okay, maybe. I blacked that out, right?
I blocked that out, because when I watched the episode, I was like, how did she get past the read-through? I mean, it sounds like an actress who acts like she's acting. Mm. You know, like, I'm supposed to say these words right now, so I'm going to say these words. And then all of a sudden, she was really aggressive, and, like, she would hide a phaser behind her back whenever Garrick was around. And then we go back to kind of that naive, playful with Melanie Smith, and they're like, okay, the producer's like, we finally got it.
I mainly, that's just from my that opinion. Episode, just always, that's for the cause, right? Where is Eddington and Sisko are having their little face off, right? And Sisko ends up poisoning the planet, basically. Not basically, he dies, right? So
yeah.
That's what I remember from that episode. So I think I kind of tune her out, and I'm with this Zial and then the later Zial played by Melanie Smith.
Yeah, I like those two. And I think the producers said that they casted her older because they wanted her. They basically just said, we wanted her to be older. And we're the producers, and we're going to do whatever the hell we want. So
I think once they figured out they were going to go in the direction with Garrick, they wanted somebody older, so it would be a little less creepy with her next to Andrew Robinson.
Right.
So that's a case of recasting that I totally understand.
Right. They said, we're not having any more of this Neelix Kess stuff going on here.
Right. Yeah. But wasn't it Voyager,
having a
though?
Relationship with a two-year-old isn't creepy to you guys?
They've done some weird recasting, like with Naomi Wildman, where she's a baby, and then like five episodes later, she's played by a 10-year-old. And they tried to explain it away with like her father's genetics or something, but it never... In this case, it works much better.
Yo, what about Alexander?
And there's the whole Alexander debacle.
I mean, that. Holy smokes. Talk about changing actors.
Didn't he skip like 10 years?
Yeah.
But then they didn't cast Nog with someone who would age over the course of the series. It's like, why were you not thinking of that? Anyway. They put so much thought into it in some places, and other places it's like they only cast him for the one episode.
Well, sometimes they may bring in a character where they don't realize they're going to use that character.
That's true. That's true. Nog didn't have to become such an important integral part of the series.
Well, if you think about Nog, at the beginning of the show, you would have never imagined that he would become so important to the show.
Yeah, that's very true.
But it's the way things evolve. All right, well, we are a bit past an hour already in our talk of indiscretion. So I guess we should wrap up. I think we hit all the major points. And any final thoughts?
Good.
Yeah. It was an episode. I give it a 6.
Yeah. You're not giving it a 6.5? Oh, don't get...
No, actually, when we get around to rating these, because we're coming up on DS9 soon on the other show, and I will definitely be giving this one high marks. This is one of my favorite episodes, and the relationships that were established in this and that grew from it. I mean, just everything ties into this year, and this is where it really starts growing and blooming. And making use of all that continuity that they've established to this point.
Yeah, I like the introduction of Zial. I like the Kira Dukat screen time. I liked Benjamin, like Greg said, like seeing him as a boy who can't talk to girls. Like he can command a ship, but he can't, have a casual dinner. I liked all of these aspects. I like the humanizing aspects of so many characters. I give it 4 out of 5 booty spikes. Nice. Why are you guys laughing?
Is that an object or is that emotion? I'm not sure.
That's the beauty of it. It's either.
Oh, man. International sex symbol, Tristan Rydell. I really do love this episode. I watched it and I was instantly saying, Chris, we must do this one. It's got so many layers to it. It's like an onion. There's so many layers. And I can just keep watching it and see little bits. My favorite thing, we could just talk for hours and hours about the Garrick Kira relationship, and I can't wait to come back to it later.
Dukat.
It's one of those things. Yeah, oh sorry, Dukat Kira. Garrick Dukat, that's a whole other matter. Wow. There's all sorts of fan fiction that you guys are seriously never going to see.
I told you to stop looking up that fan fiction. It's poisoning your mind. Now you're using the wrong names on the show.
Oh, man.
You know this stuff. That other stuff, it's non-canon, Greg. It's non-canon.
It's non-canon. As much as it's part of my own personal canon, it can't be as part of the larger Ready Room canon.
I also told you to stop writing together with Char. That fan fiction you guys are writing.
She encourages me. The thing I was saying is that the Dukat-Kira relationship is not something they dreamed up when writing the novel for this show. It's something that came out of where the characters are at this point in the series. And I love it. And I can't wait to talk about where it develops later on in the series.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll keep my final thoughts really brief, only to say that... this episode has everything in it that I love about Star Trek, and especially that I love about DS9. I love the space battles and all the techie stuff that goes on, but really it's all about people and the relationships and exploring those issues. That's what Star Trek's about, and this episode has all that in there in multiple relationships. So this is really good DS9. All right, well, thanks for joining us, guys. Today. And Ben, before we go, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
Yeah, you can catch me usually on my other podcast, Dork Trek, at dorktrek.com, where the crew of the USS J.H. Boner review TNG episodes. We're in fifth season now, so we'll be wrapping up and starting into DS9, so that's going to be interesting. And then my new podcast, Doctor Who themed, playingdoctorpodcast.com. where we watch and review Doctor Who episodes.
So we got Playing Doctor and the Boner.
Yes.
I'm sensing a theme with you, McCormick.
I didn't come up with the Boner. He was John Boner was a poet from North Carolina. He was known as the Shakespeare of the South, and we've named our ship in honor of him.
Ah.
And let me just say, as a fellow Southerner...
Forgive me for my mind being in the gutter.
Let me just say, Ben, as a fellow Southerner, I love the fact that the Shakespeare from our neck of the woods would be a boner. So what does that say about us? And we should also point out that on Playing Doctor, you co-host with Lieutenant Commander Jenny Zell of Dork Trek.
That's correct.
Well.
I shanghaied her from Dork Trek, and so now we also travel in a TARDIS.
And if I can jump in, I believe the last episode released is the one that I'm going to say featured me. I really loved joining you guys on Playing Doctor and talk about the episode with the Daleks. So I'm hoping I can be on again in the future.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I think it's the only episode of a Doctor Who podcast that contained a barrel roll.
That is correct.
Probably very true.
Thanks to Greg. All right. Well, Tristan, tell everyone where they can go if they want to have a look at your spiky hair and...
Oh, sorry, it sounded like there was more to that. Just my spiky hair. You can find me at Hyperchannel at trek.fm/hyperchannel. And there, every Thursday, we release a 3 to 5 minute video, which is a Star Trek news wrap-up. And it's got graphics by the amazing Christopher Jones and voiced and hosted by me, apparently the international sex symbol, Tristan Riddell. And also, you can find me at Twitter... at the Insane Robin. I tweet about Star Trek constantly, and I will try to follow as many Star Trek fans as I can. Just message me and let me know, hey, I heard you on the Ready Room, and I heard you on Viper Channel, and I'm a Star Trek fan too. And also, I from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. is when I start the Star Trek question of the day, and I really like it when people give me their different opinions or their different lists or their choices, and it just allows everybody who participates and follows me to find new Star Trek fans and like find different opinions and new people that they haven't heard from before. So it really gets the conversation going, and sometimes it pisses people off, which is fun.
We should point out that that's 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time.
Central Time, thank you. Yes.
For me, your question comes around midnight, so I have to stay up to get it, and then and I get a lot of glares because I'm still up, but it's okay because I have to partake in the trivia, in the question of the day.
Question of the day.
It's not trivia, unless you want to make it trivia. Okay, well, thanks again for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Well, finally, Chris, we have discussed DS9 without going back and talking about the concept of the show and how it's a darker, grittier Star Trek. We actually dug in and talked about the episode itself, so I think we need to give each other a high five and a slap on the back and a hearty... yo-ho, or whatever gentlemen do.
Who are we, Bashir and Miles? I don't know.
I know.
You want to go to the holodeck and reenact a...
No, it's fine. We'll go it's fine.
The holosuite and reenact a battle. I don't know.
Right, yes. World War II aces, yes. Once again.
You notice at the end of Sacrifice of Angels, after all of that with the mines and the Alpha Quadrant almost gets taken over by the Dominion. Yeah. They get back to the station. As soon as they walk down, Miles is like, Bashir, 10 minutes, holosuite. And Bashir's like, oh yes, the Battle of Britain. I'll be there right away. It's like, guys, you just got back. It's the first thing you're going to go do?
Yeah.
I mean,
where's
it's
understandable Keiko? That the two of us... Right, I know. We're, that's what I'm thinking. I mean... It makes sense for the two of us. I mean, you graphic designer, you teach English, you have a Star Trek podcast, and I do as well. Makes sense that we're going to want to spend some time playing a video game where we get to save the galaxy from the Borg. But when you're already saving the galaxy from the Dominion and the Breen and the Cardassians and the Klingons, surely you just want to come home and you know... Do what a husband does. You don't
see
need to go
wife.
Out to the battle and see your wife. I mean, seriously, you don't need to add on to it with the Battle of Britain.
Yeah. All right. But yes, I am glad that we actually talked about Deep Space Nine for once.
Yes.
My favorite show. We got into the details and we'll do it again.
Fantastic. Hopefully we can keep up this streak going forward.
So. All right. Well, let's tell everyone where they can contact us, Greg, if they want to share their thoughts on our discussion today or of indiscretion or anything else that we talked about. Also, to let us know which officially licensed products they want to see. that are not on the shelves at the moment, you can go to trek.fm/contact. You can send us a message through there. Of course, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, on Google Plus at hyperchannel/trekfmg+, which hopefully soon may become a real Google Plus URL. They're finally rolling out normal URLs.
Oh, but, wonderful.
But not to everybody yet. We wouldn't want to do that. So maybe, you know, 6 months from now, we'll be able to get you a real G Plus URL. And you can find us on Twitter at username TrekFM, which I have to tell you, we've always had a lot of interaction with our followers, Greg. But since not only you and I, but also Drew and Char are tweeting now, our account is just going wild all the time. And I love it. I love that our listeners and our followers really talk to us about Star Trek, because that's why we're there. We want to talk to you. Tweet us and let us know what you think. And you'll always get some discussions going with us. So, Greg, everyone can find you on Twitter also, correct?
That's right. I am there at Greg Harbin, where I'm posting a lot of pictures from around Seattle, talking about the various videos I'm making and various very obscure things about people that I'm not going to mention explicitly for various reasons. It's fun. You'll probably want to mostly follow the Trek FM account, honestly.
To be honest.
But yeah, I love having one-on-one discussions with people at my personal Twitter. Just be prepared for a mélange of various tweets coming out.
Right, yeah. Yeah, we don't... Greg and I don't... We do tweet about Star Trek from our personal accounts, but we also tweet about a lot of other stuff that's not Star Trek. So, but... If you enjoy listening to us and you want to chat with us about all kinds of other things, then definitely follow us there. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And besides the Star Trek stuff, I tweet a lot about Japan. I tweet about design. I tweet random song lyrics and see if anyone figures out what the reason I'm tweeting them. And also you can follow along my apparent and unintentional attempt to visit every coffee shop in Tokyo. sorry about that. And but please go ahead and follow me. And if you do follow me, send me an at reply and talk to me and let me know that you came in. Because I have a lot of stuff that just goes by. So let me know you're there. All right, Greg. Well, I think that covers pretty much everything other than to encourage everyone to go to trek.fm, go to the site. We have a lot of great writers there. We have, you know, all of our different hosts who, you know, from all the different shows. Yeah. There's so much activity going on all the time. Trek.fm, that'll get you to the front page. And from there, you can find all the other stuff that's happening. Well, Greg, summer is eventually going to be over here in Tokyo, but it hasn't happened yet. I've had enough of these 34 degree Celsius days. So I'm going to go hop into an ice shower.
Oh, I could use an ice shower myself, but I believe it is time to stick a booty spike in it, because the Ready Room is done.